Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. Eddie Pence is out and about, and he's still working on his comedy special, and I just recorded some music for it, so you're going to hear and see some great art as it comes out soon. We'll let you know and keep you posted. We're going to jump right into our interview right now. We've got phenomenal talent, saxophonist. You play alto, tenor, barry,
soprano.
Soprano. Do you play clarinet, too?
Flute. Piccolo.
Flute? My goodness.
Alto, flute, clarinet, bass,
all
clarinet.
The woodwinds.
Yeah, I'm gonna just put it out there like that.
I should just call you Woodwind Superhero.
You can do that if
you want
to. You're
like, yeah, that works. Say hello to Mr. Wes Smith. Hello.
What's up, LA? Thank you for
having me. Studio audience loves you already.
Thank you for having me, brother.
Dude, of course, of course. We're going to jump right into this. And where did you, like, grow up? Where did you get the itch for music? What was the moment of zen that made you want to play?
You know what, man? I'm a California boy. I grew up in San Luis Obispo. Back when it was hippies and rednecks, before it was wine country.
It's still hippies and rednecks, but with some wine country.
But with some wine country in there, so I guess that's good. You got to level up, you know? Man, mom made me play saxophone as a kid. I didn't like it that much. Grandma got me a Lester Young CD.
And I just changed everything.
I just had to figure it out. I had to figure out what he was doing.
So did your mom want you, was she like, I want you to play saxophone, it's a cool instrument, it'll be cool for you?
Yeah. You know, she's like, you're going to play music, it's good for your brain, you know?
Was she a singer? Was she into music at all?
She loves music, but she never got into singing or playing piano or anything like that, as far as I know, you know?
So she was like, you're going to do this, and you're going to get good at it.
You know what, man, maybe she'll call in and buy me right now. She's like, actually, I'm a woodwind superhero.
That's right. And you know what? Did you were you listening to any like jazz or saxophone music before you started playing, or was it just all afterwards?
You know what, man? I'm afraid to come back to it. It was hippies and rednecks growing up, so there wasn't a whole lot of jazz.
That's
growing
what I was
up
thinking.
In San Luis Obispo.
Yeah. So what were you listening to as a kid?
You know what? Not much, man. My father, rest his soul, would try and put on some Beatles or some Eagles or something.
Good man.
And get this, I would turn it off.
What?
I'd say, Dad, turn that. You know what? Off.
You could say shit.
Trying to keep it classy for LA. You know,
I'll keep it filthy. That's all right.
You know what? It's the yin and the yang, dude. So I didn't really care for music growing up, man.
Wow.
And mom was like, hey, you know, you need to play an instrument in school. And grandma got me that Lester Young, man. And God bless her, because that was
that
it.
Changed it.
Yeah, I didn't even know many scales or anything like that. But it was just like, wow, I have to figure out how to do that.
That's
horn.
Awesome. And you know, it's funny how like somebody will just change the way you hear music, even if it's on the same instrument. That's what's so mesmerizing about instruments. You know?
Yeah.
It's like so many different styles and so many different, like, you know, a guitar player, I could hear a guitar in so many different styles, and then somebody will pick it up and play it in a different way, and it'll just strike me in a different way.
And you have to have that in your vocabulary.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. So did you have like jazz band or any kind of marching band or anything like that?
You know, we had we had marching band in high school, which I did not like. We had
I did it. I hated it, but I did it.
We had I hated it too, man. We had wind ensemble, which I did not like. And then the community college, Cuesta College.
Yeah, I was just about to ask if you went to Cuesta.
Man, Cuesta had an amazing jazz program, and credit where credit is due. I don't know if they're tuning in right now, but George Stone and Dave Becker were my teachers, and they they took it from there once they knew that, you know, I needed to figure out Lester Young.
Were they hard on you guys? Were they giving you cool tunes to play?
George yelled at me a fair amount, you know. You know, he yelled at me a fair amount. Dave is a sweetheart, a wonderful saxophone player, you know, woodwind guy. Very, very inspiring educators. So
how big were like the ensembles that you were playing? Were you doing like jazz trios, or were you doing like
it was a big band? Yeah, it was a big band. So it just kind of got thrown in the fire, and you know, hey, you know, play alto, and you got to somehow sound bigger than the other four guys playing in the section, and you know.
And when did you learn to solo? Like, did you start soloing like then, or did you start later? Saxophone, you start soloing pretty early.
You kind of just hit
in
it.
Arrangements.
Yeah, it's just one of those instruments that, you know, it kind of takes you there. You know, Dave helped me along. Lester, vis-a-vis the recordings, helped me along. And we kind of just sort of dug into emulating the great musicians of the genre, you know,
Did you get into Coltrane, Charlie Parker's at the time?
Yeah, Bird and Train immediately kind of kicked into gear. Couldn't play it like them.
Right.
Still can't play it like them.
Well, yeah. You're a lot closer than you think, though. You're a lot
20,
closer.
20 years later, and you still can't play it like them.
Well, you know, I remember listening to Charlie Parker, and I was living with a saxophonist at USC, and he was like, yeah, man, he's playing this on a plastic saxophone. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, you know, he pawned it for some heroin, and yeah, he's playing this on a plastic saxophone. And it's like, it sounds like the most soulful shit I've ever heard.
It's so cool.
He's just one of those cats, you know? Yeah. But it's weird, like, when you hear somebody just shedding that much on an instrument, you're just like, wow, you know? Coltrane took it to a whole other level.
Yeah, man. Just incredible players. And it was, you know, if Lester Young caught you, you know, then those guys kept carrying you. You know, from then on out, it was just kind of like, man, I just really want to play saxophone a lot.
You know, you play with a lot of really big people right now, and a lot of them are soul, pop, rock, you know, kind of all genres. Were you kind of introduced to some of that music at school and college, or did you kind of like, was that part of your listening in that time period, just socially, or what?
Brother, truth be told, college was pretty purist jazz. You know, I really didn't get into pop and R&B and soul, especially all that soul stuff, man. It's so killing.
Yeah,
that
stuff is badass. So killing, yeah, dude. It's so good.
It's really badass.
It's like, when I think of horns, it's like, I remember I got a JB's CD, and it's like, just listening to those arrangements.
Yeah.
And then you listen to like Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, and then you listen to Giant Steps, and you listen to, you know, Hank Mobley, Soul Station.
Yeah.
You know, all those kind of cats.
I got a couple kids working on that record right now.
So good.
They're eating
so
it up.
So good. Yeah. And it's like, you listen to it, and it's like, there was an era, a time period of jazz where it was just, it was ridiculous. It like documented the time period, documented the vibe. It was just like a laid back, jazz heavy era.
Right.
And it's like, of course, when you're playing saxophone, you're like the lead singer. You know, it's like, you are the lead melody in 90% of a lot of those standards, you know what I mean? So, of course, you're listening to nothing but jazz.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. But, you know, college was just definitely very very big band-centric. You know, a lot of Count Basie, Sinatra at the Sands was just a huge record for me in college. You know, learning how to play lead like that. And then, you know, you got to listen to a lot of Sinatra, which can't hurt nobody.
Oh, dude,
you know?
he's the best. Man, I recorded in a microphone that he used. And then I saw the clip maybe 8 years later of him actually using it. And he was smoking a cigarette, drinking, live band. I'm like, oh, they just don't make cats like that. You know, even like the band, they just don't have bands like that anymore where it's like everybody's so ridiculously tight in the room live doing an orchestra or a jazz band and the singers in the room. And it's all recorded live. You know what I mean? Just don't record like that these days.
I mean, NK Band is pretty live.
Well, we do it pretty live, but even still, it's not that live. You know what I mean? So it's like there's something about that era where it was like less tracks, ribbon mics.
That big mic that looks like a car part.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. So Sinatra was a big influence.
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, but then, you know, as soon as you got out of school, it was kind of like, okay, let's not be the weird jazz kid on the scene and, you know, maybe get a gig.
Right. Diversify.
I don't know. You know, just right. maybe get a gig. That might be kind of good at some
well,
point.
Well, I can't imagine. Is the jazz scene huge in San Luis Obispo? I can't imagine. Maybe it's some wineries or private events.
Yeah, so so this is interesting. So Cuesta College was my sophomore year of high school to a year after graduating because there was no jazz program in my high school. So
right.
I just kind of, okay, I'll, you know, pass go and just go right to Cuesta. And then I moved out to Rochester, New York to go to school and study music. There's an incredible saxophonist named Walt Weisskopf that was out there at the time, and I just wanted to – I needed to work with him. I loved what he was doing. But then after that, I kind of knew I wanted to come back to L.A., man, you know, going back to that California boy thing.
Yeah.
I just,
well, you got the weather. You got the vibe. There's
yeah
something about it.
Yeah, there's some magic in Los Angeles, man. So I wanted to get back here, and pretty quick it was like, well, you know, you can play 2-5-1s in all 13 keys,
right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
But maybe there's all this other stuff happening. There's just all this other cool stuff happening.
I think that's what, you know, a lot of people don't understand about L.A. versus New York, because really those are the two schools for music in the live scene. It's like all the recording, all the live music is really in L.A. and New York. There's a heavy scene in both. But L.A. kind of doesn't get like the, you know, it doesn't get its due because it's like New York is known for jazz. I know so many players that moved to New York. And they spent so many years just cutting their teeth there. But it's surprising because there's, I think, more of a renaissance with jazz musicians here in a different way. You have people like Kamasi Washington. And, you know what I mean? You have, like, real forces in jazz coming out of L.A. now, you know, versus New York. There are amazing cats in every jazz club, but you don't hear of anybody kind of surfacing or kind of changing the game a little bit. So, you know, it's a different atmosphere. You
that
know?
That no compromise New York jazz scene, man, New York is still the king of that. It's always going to be the king of that. But there's, I mean, it's so interesting, man. There's only 12 notes in the system of music that we all abide by. And, you know, you can play this no compromise straight ahead jazz and use those 12 notes, but you could also check out all this incredible other languages going on that uses those same 12 notes, man.
Yep.
There's an amazing universality.
I love that. And I think that's what the LA thing is, hyper creative in that regard, you know, with electronic music or like merging styles or like taking risks and bending kind of the rules a little bit as to like, what is a genre? You know, because there's so many styles of music now that it's just blending everything.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know?
Yeah.
I worked with Wes and a bunch of great horn players like Mike Aiea for Arroyo Seco. And I got to tell you, like, I love working with horn players because there's a language that only horn players speak to each other. And it's like sometimes it's just like grunts or like little you sing little things while the most amazing thing I think about horn players is while the band is playing and it'll be loud, a horn player will just sing one little thing or say something and everybody's on board already. Tell me about what that language is like, because you'll never know it unless you're in it. But there's definitely a language that horn players speak to each other where they can get hits, lines so quick.
I think that's the language, the slang, if you will, of not effing up on stage, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, you know, bands, you get called all the time to play a show, or maybe the jam band scene, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, the idea is to just jam and have a good time and get the audience shaking their you-know-whats, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's its own thing, where you want to be able to put that fire together as fast as you can. But then there's other situations where, you know, a band leader has an event coordinator that they're working with, and the event coordinator didn't really budget in rehearsal money or time for rehearsal, and it's kind of like, okay, well, we still got to do this gig, man, so time to speak the language of not effing up on stage.
Right. Now, you've been playing with Booker T for quite, how many years now? Maybe 6 or 7?
You know what, man? Maybe not 7 years. I'm trying to think of when we did his record. I think we recorded it in 2012 with Kevin Williams and Leon from Regiment.
Oh, yeah.
And Rashawn Ross was on that session, too. And I was, you know, again, just trying not to be the guy effing up on that session because those guys are monsters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to hang. And the record came out good, and they all, as you know, are the busiest cats in the world. So when the time came to put together a horn section for Booker, I want to say that was 2013. So I guess, yeah, maybe five, six years now, crazy. Man. Time is strange.
And like, you're playing with a Hall of Famer. Like, that is, you know, not all gigs are like that. You know what I mean? So, like, what's it like kind of, like, working in, like, you're kind of working in his environment. You're, like, on his playing field.
Oh,
on,
yeah.
On some level. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's making, I mean, he's been making music for 40, 50 years now, you know?
Yeah, 50
All the old Memphis Stack
years.
Stuff, you know? Like, so it's like, how do you kind of, you know, I think every artist has to evolve on some level, you know? But how do you challenge, you know, how do you challenge an artist like that versus playing the gig versus keeping it creative for you and exciting as a band? You know?
Yeah, I that's an interesting conversation because that's he is just an incredible musician and a gracious band leader. He is a gracious band leader, man, and his music is so that you know that Stack stuff, that Memphis stuff, just like you're saying, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And it's so honest and it feels so good.
Well, it's like the fabric of history for
the United States,
really.
You know, I'm not calling my boss OLD or nothing like that, but you know, he has crafted this incredible music and it doesn't need any improvement.
Maybe. Right, right.
You know, I know like, you know, I know tradition and I don't know how to broach that conversation. I know tradition is kind of a word that we don't really take a whole lot of heed to anymore, you know?
Right.
But with that music, man, I don't want to change it.
Right. No, it doesn't need to be changed.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we just have our fun putting fire into that just the way they used to play it, man.
That's
and
awesome.
Then, to his credit, as a band leader, man, like we'll end a show with, Heya.
Yeah.
You know, so we will bring in more modern songs into the mix.
That's awesome.
It's cool, man. Booker's a great cat, man. You know, his boy is playing guitar real strong in it. Ted's a good friend, and I think something about, you know, having young blood in such tried and true music.
Oh yeah,
that's a recipe for success.
Well, it's like you know, he's like a seasoned vet. You know, and it's like he's also like created a sound. He's part of the Memphis sound. He's like probably the biggest part of the Memphis sound in a lot of ways.
That
you know?
Music is some of the finest stuff that America has created culturally.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just it's an honor to be a part of.
That's amazing. You know? And you play with some other people. You play with Pharrell and Robin
Thicke. Yeah, a couple
Thicke.
One-off sessions. Yeah. You know, done some records with them, and that's kind of just more in the commercial music world of L.A., man. You know, and it's a blast. You go to these super high-end studios and hang with these artists that are
superstars.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. You know?
But you know what? It also, like, the one thing that I've learned, it's like, I've worked with so many musicians. I came from the classical world, and then working with jazz musicians, they are the most talented musicians out of all musicians because they can play so many different styles.
Thank you, brother.
They can come into a session and play what you need, also innovate, give you ideas that you weren't even prepared for because their level of ear training and just intervals and just arrangement, you know, like, coming from the big band stuff, you're already hearing stuff that most people in the pop world, they're not really kind of privy to in some ways, you know?
Yeah, I think the training is a little different what you're, you know, approached with, but I was just really reading this really interesting article that Branford, sorry, not an article, it was an interview that Branford did, and Branford Marsalis, saxophone player,
it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah, you know, jazz royalty, and. He was just kind of having this interesting dialogue with the interviewer. I can't remember his name now, but this idea that kind of going back to it, man, like Charlie Parker, if you listen to that music and give it time to listen to that music, because, you know, in 2019, a lot of people are like, oh, that's old music. But if you listen to it, it bounces still, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of What were his words? After Bird, jazz music kind of got a little too deep into the structure of kind of what we were talking about earlier. There's 12 notes. Mathematically, how do you assemble them? You know, right. Maybe a little too deep into that, because, I mean, there's jazz that, man, I can't listen to it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's because I'm a, you know.
Well, you probably are like a traditionalist.
I'm a softy LA guy now.
Yeah. No, but you know what? It's like there's for me, is you raise a great point, because like bebop was an era in jazz I just love. You
man,
know?
It balances and it swings.
It just, and it's just never jive. It's like always purist. It's always real. It's always all about the melody and the improvisation. It's the perfect balance of both. Whereas someone like avant-garde jazz stuff,
thank you.
It's like super abstract and it's very indulgent to me. It's like, yo, I get that you're a jazz musician, but like, keep it musical. You know,
and make it indulgent. Those men and women do stuff on the horn that, you know, honestly, I can't do.
Right.
I can't do it. You know what I mean? I have no idea how you even start to do that. So it's that obsession with the structure. So, you know, I guess just getting back to where we were talking about, man, it's interesting. You know, maybe jazz musicians have that training, but they really need to they have to respect what pop producers and pop musicians that music feels good.
Yeah, no, and
it
feels
really good.
The funny thing is, it's like you. This is what I love about the way you look at music, and I always follow you on Instagram and Facebook, and it's like you have a respect. Yeah, you know, you have a respect for pop music, the written song.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
You know?
Like, that's what's always going to give you that level of workmanship and work ethic and just creative prowess, you know? Because it's that respect for the music that sometimes some musicians don't have that. You know, it's like they just, like, want to be, I guess, you know, on that level of some of the huge innovators, like a Miles Davis or whatever.
Right.
And Miles Davis, man, he had so much respect for the written song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
all that stuff that grooves. You know, I'm trying to think of the Human Nature Band.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he was covering MJ with Kenny Garrett.
Of course.
That stuff is killing.
Dude, and that's like Kenny Garrett was, you know, I remember I heard one track where Kenny Garrett was just, I mean, he was blowing the lid off the place.
Yeah.
And Miles Davis gets on the microphone and goes, he does that shit every night. I was just like, whoa. You know what I mean? So it's, but there's a reverence to the song and to the music that I love. I want to ask you now, when you play with all these people, how does that contribute to you as a writer? Because you've been writing music and making arrangements and like getting back to your sound and your music, how does that contribute or, you know, become a part of that?
I have, you know, I've been doing a lot of writing, man, and the breadth of it has varied quite a bit. So I'll do writing for, you know, singers and, you know, just horn section specific stuff. I've been doing a little more writing for some, you know, some TV spots, and that's a different bag now. You know, now you can got to really figure out what it is that the client is paying you for.
Right.
Right. So that's a whole different skill set. Man, creatively, I hope we'll get a chance to play it here.
We're about to.
But creatively, I can't seem to
narrow down.
Get away from the jazz, man. You know, this track that we're listening to is going to be off of an EP called Everything Under the Sun. And I called it that kind of for what we've been talking about, man.
Yeah.
I've been doing Everything Under the Sun as a musician
in
LA.
Great title. Great
you know?
Title.
Thank
yeah.
you, man. Thank you, brother. So the track is called Paradise in Her Eyes. And that's for my wife, Ashley. And, I know it feels like jazz. I was thinking like, oh, I'm going to write this really, you know, really, you know, cast the net wide.
Right.
Hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, man, it's jazz.
Well, let's listen to it.
If you don't mind, I'd love to do that, Nikhil. Let's do it.
This is Wes Smith, Paradise.
In Her Eyes.
In Her Eyes. All right, here it is. rules.
You know, just making. Sometimes I check myself because I've been listening to that song, I don't know, 300-400 times now, just mixing it down, and I had it mastered with an incredible engineer. But I did all the mixing. I did all the producing and arranging, obviously, and all the playing. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, man, there's a lot of space in this music.
Right.
You know? And I was
kind of, what you want, though.
Well, I was kind of questioning myself, man. I'm like, dude, you know, it's got to be more. More.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, no, you know what? I want to, you know, right now, creatively, I want to write music that if people will listen to it, lets them just slow down a little.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like,
you know, just where we are with, I don't know, man. Just
the times, man. The times.
The times are. The
technology's crazy. It's like our attention span's all over the place.
It's a very busy time to be alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Absolutely. So, it's kind of like we were just saying while the track was playing, man. I want it to be mellow. I want it to be pretty. I want there to be, like, time for you to think.
Yeah. Well, what's cool is, like, it's got, like, this almost like a bossa nova for you, and then you have, like, this. Almost Buckshot LaFunk. You know that band?
Yeah,
that's
I do.
One of Branford's projects. It's like got this kind of vibe where it's like doing these, you know, saxophone harmony lines.
Yeah.
And then call and response flute lines. I mean, it's just, it speaks. It speaks. It's all phrasing. Like
Thank
the whole,
brother.
Every part is making this beautiful phrase. And then together, it's just really beating, you know?
It
sounds like a heartbeat the whole time. It's
Thank
just
you,
like,
dude.
It's alive.
Yeah.
Dude. Amazing.
Connects with itself. I like it. I think it's pretty damn good.
It's awesome.
And you were saying,
we were talking about this off the air, but you recorded this one guy at a time, just coming in the room and like, okay, lay your things down.
Yep.
And then have bass come in. Lay your things down.
Yep.
How did you kind of like, what were your kind of vibes to tell him or instructions like? What style or what groove, or did you kind of let them interpret what you were writing to get a feel?
Yeah, I mean, when I write, you know, music for myself, I guess that's what you would call this, you know what I mean? I want to write, you know, jazz music that I feel good about, you know? I always start at my Rhodes, man. I love the way that instrument sounds,
yeah.
the way you can just build chords and it just sounds.
You know what year your Rhodes is by chance?
Oh, I think it's like an 83 or something like
awesome.
That. It sounds
awesome.
Really good, man. It's just fun to sit there and pound out
dude,
chords.
Dude, I love Rhodes, man.
You
I
know?
Love Rhodes, yeah.
It's a great sound. But kind of like we were talking about earlier is that, you know, I have to pull myself out of the structure of that music. You know what I mean? Because you'll get two, let me use all 12 of my fingers to play this chord.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, creatively, what I did was I would come up with some changes that I really liked and then try not to overdo it, put a saxophone thing that works over those, but again, I didn't want it to be too
over the top,
too jazz,
right.
You know, too, you know, cerebral.
Well, you know what's funny?
What
I always
you know?
Find this, like, whenever cats play on other people's records,
yeah,
they always play the right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes time for you to do your own records, they're like overthinking about all the possibilities that are out there, just and it's like, it's so crazy because it's a different philosophy. It's like it's not that you care less, but you just know you're objective on one,
right?
And then you're so close as the writer, and you're aware of all the possibilities,
right?
That it's overwhelming. You're like, it's easy to overthink.
Absolutely,
you know, it takes time. Like I feel like whenever I make a record, I won't know how to really listen to the record. Maybe 10 years until it's past me. You know
what
I mean?
That's right.
It's the truth. Because then you can go back and you can finally go, oh, I really can't change this now. It is what it is. And I love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's I love it. It's a great song. I'm sure your wife loves it. I, you know, it's just got to be.
Ashley, I hope so. Because, you know, all those hours I've been hiding from you in the studio, that's what it's for.
All you got to do is, like, whenever you get in a fight, you just play that song. Like, hey, are we made up yet? Come on. I want to talk about this because this is one of the things that I also really love and respect about you is you and I share friendships with Mike Aiea and Zane Musa, both horn players, both some of the best horn players. And you posted a picture after Mike passed away of Zane on your right and Mike on your left. And I just wanted to ask you, what was it like just being influenced? Because they were definitely influential on every player in the same way that you're influencing players. What was it like just being influenced by those cats as a horn player?
You know, half of it was just sheer terror. I moved to L.A. at the end of 2008 in a crappy black Volvo station wagon and $300 in my pocket. And I found a place to live, and one of the first guys I met was Zane.
Wow.
And I'm here, you know, trying to figure out, like we were talking about earlier, man, I came from a very only jazz background in school. And so coming out here and seeing all this incredible, beautiful music that's going around in Los Angeles. And then one of the first saxophone players you meet is Zane.
That's crazy.
And I'm just like, dude. I'm like, golly, man, what am I doing?
Right.
You know, I may as well just go, you know, no offense to all the CPAs of the world, but I may as well just go get my CPA.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because what do I have on this guy?
Right.
Don't got nothing on this guy. And to this day, you know, rest his soul, still don't got nothing on him, man. He was an incredible musician. So, you know, you're
But
terrified.
Both those guys respected you because they always mentioned you to play with NK bands when they couldn't do gigs. They're like, hey, man, I got some cats. And so, like, man. I had heard of you from them. And then when we did a Royal Seco, so, like, those guys respected you.
Man.
And earned that respect, you know, in that world. It ain't easy to do.
Zane and Mike, man. Those guys were, they still are. I don't mean to say in the past tense, but, you know, they still are in my memory. They're just treasures, man.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and it is kind of interesting because Zane was a little bit more of a just balls to the wall sax guy.
Yeah.
Like in that jazz, you know, because he played with Arturo, you know, he was all over the map as a jazz saxophonist. And then Aiyah, you know, playing gigs with him, he had more of that, I don't want to say commercial because so many musicians use that in a negative connotation.
Oh, he knew when to throw it down like that. He knew that side of things.
He had that pop mentality, you know, in coursing through his heart, man, and he just made it work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So getting both those perspectives maybe has a lot to do with what we were talking about earlier because I find myself living in both those worlds here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Each of them was... just exemplary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I had to ask because I was like, I've been curious about, you know, that question for a long time. So thank you for answering and indulging me. Let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
You know, I don't know, man. We've got some half-made tracks here that, you know, we can sneak peek if you want to. What I'm going to be doing, so next week at 7 Grand, I'm going to be doing a show that's going to be built around that song we just played. That'll be the single release of Paradise in Her Eyes. That'll be 7 Grand next Thursday. The month after, man, in July, I'm going to be back at 7 Grand doing another single release. And then the month after that, I'm going to be doing a third single release.
That's awesome.
Man, you know, just trying to get this music out there, dude.
Yeah, but you're doing it in a really creative way, too. Like, that's the sign of the times.
Thank
you, bro.
You know, just, I mean, you know, yeah, the sign of the times.
It really is. No, it's true.
Got to keep that news feed going.
But it's
going,
weird.
You know?
No, it's like, you know, like I personally, I want to do one more album.
Yeah.
And then it's all going to be singles.
Yeah.
I just like, I love albums. In my mind, I would love to keep doing albums, but it just doesn't make sense with the market, with how people release music. And it's more important to do what you just said. Like, people getting 3 songs in 1 week is not the same as people getting 1 song over 3 weeks each week. You know what I mean? It's so strange. It's like you're just giving them less. So let's play something else. I want to play something else.
Yeah, man. Go ahead. Tracks. Go ahead and I'll tell you what. So the EP is called Everything Under the Sun. That single was called Paradise in Her Eyes. Let's play a little bit of Everything Under the Sun.
All right. Here goes Everything Under the Sun. Wes Smith. We'll be right back. Dude, I was slamming. I'm like just a slow funk. I love it.
Yeah,
well, you obviously love soul music and funk music and jazz.
Everything under the sun, man. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I felt good that title just came to me and it felt good. You know,
and
been
same
in LA
players?
10 years. A couple different guys, but you know, again, credit where credit is due, man. Iyagi, if you're tuned in or listening or whatever, man, you played your you know what off. This guy, I played him the track, and he's like, oh yeah, okay, wait. And he goes down to his car, and he gets like the biggest snare drum I've ever seen. And I'm like, man, what don't you know? You need to put a tom-tom on my snare? What are you doing, dude? He's like, just wait. And this snare has so much booty on it, man. Yeah. And that's what the track needed, you know. Yeah. And so that's kind of the fun.
That snap,
man. You know, just the interesting thing about having these fellas over and you know in the comfort of my home. It's you know, my studios, it's not Capitol Records, but it is a lean, mean recording rig.
Yeah.
Like, it will get the job done.
Well, the funny thing is, you say it's not Capitol Records, but I can guarantee the players that are in your room most of the time are beating the players that are in Capitol. Because I've been to some of those big studios, and you'd be surprised how many people can't play as well as the people that are playing in your room.
Man.
So it comes down to that.
You know, and there's a comfort about it where, you know, just, hey, man, you know, you coffee, you want to, you know, water, you know, my daughter's gonna come in and definitely, you know, I don't want to say ruin a track, but she's gonna come in and be like, "Daddy," you know,
totally.
Hey, cool. So, you know, we're gonna take five and then get back into it, you know. And it's just been a real pleasure for me to you know spend, gosh, I don't know, 6-7 years acquiring all this studio stuff.
Yeah,
and you know, a job will come up. And hey, we need you to do this. Okay, cool. I'll do that in my studio. Got a little more funds.
Yeah.
Add to it, you know.
I don't know if you do this, but like I always like, oh, I'm gonna buy some more gear to just add to my studio to make it, you know, compete even more with XYZ Studio. You know what I mean?
You know, it's just a pleasure to have all that stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the drum sound is mean. You know, I get a real fat drum sound out of that room now. And just to have the guys over and make this music and the, you know, it, there's not that, like, you know, you hear those like mythological music industry tales where the, you know, the band is out of time.
Right.
And they've only got
one take left.
That's right. Yeah. You know, exactly. You know, and that's fine.
Right.
You know, that's cool. That's not what my situation is, but you know, having, you know, Ryan Cross, thank you, bro, Yaji, Eric Hammer on that track. It was Adam Holly on guitar. I mean, these guys just, it's cool to chill with them. They're masters of their instruments.
Right.
And, you know, it's been great putting this music together. So we got those two. Another one will be on the way in August. And then I'm going to try and do an EP release in the wintertime, probably for my birthday. Come around December.
Smart.
So, you know, let's have a 5-song EP.
When's your birthday?
December 6th, man.
I'm 27th. So you're Sagittarius.
Yeah, crazy ass Sagittarius,
that's
man.
Right, man. You're creative though, man. That's the moon's in the right place.
You know, it was somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. So where can people find you if they want to hear you play, and where can people find you if they want to hire you for gigs or to find your music?
Well, you know, I'll do the first one first because that's what I like to do best. I love to play live. I think that's where the music exists, you know. It's a tangent, man. I can't stand when people set their cell phones on kill and just have the light on the whole time.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, music is it's this moment we all share.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. The band is sharing it, trying to share it with the audience if y'all will pay attention.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's there. It happens and then it's gone.
Right.
That's my element, man. I love live music. So live, you know, next Thursday, I believe it's June 27th. That's going to be at 7 Grand, and that'll be with this band. You know, kind of funk, kind of jazz. I may sing a little bit, little everything under the sun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's going to be Thursday. Saturdays and Sundays, you can come and catch me down at the Lux Hotel with my brother Ryan Cross and CJ Emmons. That's Saturday. Sunday, we're at Delilah in West Hollywood. And those are just fun nights. The band is always just
cranking.
The band is killing every single
week. Well, that's, you know what I love? It's like, you know, there is a scene, you know, like,
no, there really is,
you know,
man.
You and Ryan Cross, you know, CJ is another cat too. Like, there is a scene where it's like all the musicians that I find that are the most talented, they just happen to be buddies and also play with each other and know each other. And that's what makes LA such a, like a creative, just gem. That's
it is
different. That's different than other cities.
It is. It's tight knit, and it's not. I mean, I guess it can be a vibey place. You know, I've been pretty fortunate. I haven't had a whole lot of that happen, but I was just at a good friend's. You know, his daughter's turned one, and so we're all hanging, and it's kind of family hour. And there's like, I'm looking around, and there's like, you know, it's like three or four really, really good saxophone players just hanging. No one's out to get each other, man.
Right, right.
You know, there's enough work in this town.
Right.
Be chill. Right. Don't cheat nobody.
Right.
And play your ass off.
Yeah.
And this LA is going to take care of you.
Right.
You know, it's a beautiful city in that regard.
Yeah. Dude.
You know what
I
mean?
It's great perspective.
You know?
Absolutely.
It's been very, very cool, man. So it's you know, the live scene here is excellent. As far as commercial, you know, I don't know if anybody's out there listening, you know, if y'all need some horn sections or some drums or a place to do some voiceover work, you can go to www.smith5music.com. Probably just Google Wes Smith Sax. That ought to do the trick.
Yeah. And what are you on Instagram and all the social media?
Wes Smith Jazz. WESSMITHJAZZ, man. Wes Smith Jazz.
Awesome. Yep. And Wes, thank you for being a guest, man.
Yep, bro.
Dude, you're the man. You sound great. I'm going to leave everybody with the sticky, because that's just a great way to end the show.
Oh, talking about the sticky whiskey, man?
Yeah, give me a little backstory about this song.
So you surprised me. This I thought maybe we were going to play this music while we were talking or whatever.
Oh, no, we're going to feature it, man. That's the way it should be.
This is another half, like, it's about halfway done.
Let me just be honest with you. Your halfway done is better than most people's full way done and a half. All right, so don't even put it on that, you know, on that level like that.
Thank you, brother. So this is a song. It's got a little more of that partido alto. This is like the drums is like some proper Brazil. It's actually an older track. I'm just getting around to finishing it, man, because I need like a 48-hour day, man. You know,
well, that's how it is. You know,
jeez, it's
like,
you know,
it's you find like your moments where you can really kind of indulge in the creative, you know, moment. But when you get into that, it's like you realize you could spend 10 years on a track.
Oh man,
easily.
Oh man,
easily.
Well, you know, this one's been about five. So
wow.
Well, you know,
hence the name, the sticky, man.
You know what I mean?
You're in it.
Yeah. So there's definitely you know, there's some muted Pro Tools tracks hanging out. This, you know, it's about a halfway done track, but I think the groove is there, and it's kind of drawn more from that Brazilian tradition. And I love that music, man. So go ahead and play it. We're gonna check
awesome.
It out.
Well, you know, Wes, we're gonna have to have you back too, maybe 9-10 months. You're
going
to get a text from me to come back. But on behalf of Eddie and myself and Ronan, who's sitting in the back, we'll see you guys here next week. This is The Sticky with Wes Smith. Thank you.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.